thanks for tuning in, folks. This has been an experiment with time on WRCT Pittsburgh. Have a great night, folks. Take care of yourselves.
My big sister Jenna's face turned bright red. She was just showing people online how to use a new cream. She still has the scars.
Real products are tested for safety. My brother's friend Billy had to jump off his motor scooter when it caught fire. He fell and got hit by a car. Blew his chances to play basketball in college.
Go for real.
Visit ncpc.org/goforreal. Brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the United States Patent and Trademark Office.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh.
get it while you can. Just 16, discovered rock and roll, became a backstabber. got nine bullets in it. Nine bullets in my roommate's gun.
As a public service to the listeners of WRCT, we have compiled a short list of items you should not have in your possession at the present time. 1. A muscle car. 2. A Betamax. 3. Acid-washed anything. 4. A members-only jacket. 5. Stirrup pants. 6. Asbestos. 7. Hummelware. 8. Sweet and Low. 9. Copies of Dynetics or Megatrends. And 10. A radio not tuned to 88.3 FM. If you do have any of these items, WRCT suggests you get with the program.
Sky cracks open, the walls falling through the floor. Just as well to keep it, a guessing game in store. You're with me now, we'll be again. Other points in between. Cool, cool mornings turn the days to swim or sink. Living right is easy.
What goes wrong? You're causing it. Didn't want to turn that way. You're causing it. Doesn't make a difference now. You're causing it. Dances falling through the cracks each day. Too close now to change it. Whose goal is louder anyway? When in doubt, move on. No need to sort it out. You're with me now. We'll be again. All their points in between. I want to find the right side. Living right is easy. What goes wrong? You're causing it. The drown. Didn't want to turn that way. You're causing it. The drown. Doesn't make a difference now. You're causing it. The drown. Silence knows. Can't drown. What goes wrong? You're causing it. The drown. Didn't want to turn that way. You're causing it. The drown. It doesn't make a difference now. You're causing it. The drown. Silence knows. Can't drown.
Younger, I put up completely broken and built to crash. Castro had old Bill to crash. Loving 44 beneath my head. Got up next morning and I grabbed my gun. I took a shot of cocaine and away I run. Made a good run, but I run too slow. They overtook me down in Juarez, Mexico. Laid in the hot joint, taking a pill. In walked the sheriff from Jericho Hill. He said, Willie Lee, your name is not Jack Brown. You're the dirty hack that shot your woman down. Yes, oh yes, my name is Willie Lee. If you've got a warrant, just read it to me. Shot her down, cause she made me slow. I thought I was her daddy, but she had five more. Carcass in that county jail. The next morning, about at 9:30, I spied a sheriff coming down the line. He kind of coughed as he cleared his throat. He said, come on, you dirty hack, to the district court. Into the courtroom, my trial began, where I was held by 12 honest men. Just before the jury started, I saw that dirty judge commence to look about. Mercy on me.
The judge smiled as he picked up his pen. 99 years in the Folsom State Pen. 99 years underneath that ground. I can't forget the day I shot that bad bitch down. Come on, you gotta listen unto me. Lay off that whiskey and let that cocaine be. Sue it!
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control. And priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
Hello! This is WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. My name is Riona Duncan, and today on Forbes Avenue, we're going to be talking about food resources and the Carnegie Mellon Food Drive, which is ongoing until November 8th. First, for this episode, I interviewed Jennifer Zagurich from the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank about that organization. Then, I talked to Carol Pano about the history of the Carnegie Mellon Food Drive. Last, I went down to the CMU Food Bank to talk to Jonathan Anguiano about on-campus food resources that students can access. Let's get into it. Welcome. We're here on Forbes Avenue with Jennifer Zagurich from the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. So could you start by saying a little about yourself?
Yeah, good morning. I'm Jennifer Zagurich, Director of Corporate and Community Giving at Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. And right now we are seeing an unprecedented need in the community and really appreciate the time you're taking to share our story.
Yeah, so in terms of the organization, for anyone who isn't aware of the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank, could you say a little about what you do?
Absolutely. So the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank serves 11 counties in southwestern Pennsylvania. We work somewhat like a hub and spoke model, where we're the hub and we handle all the sourcing and the purchasing of the food and the donated products of the food and supplies that we get in. And then we spoke it out to about 1,000 partners in those 11 counties. Those partners include food pantries and homeless shelters and soup kitchens, our child nutrition program, and other areas where folks receive food.
So what types of foods and services do you tend to spoke out?
Yeah, so we have somewhat of a wholesale. So our warehouse in Duquesne, PA, about a mile away from Kennywood, looks maybe like a Costco with racks and racks of food, everything from shelf-stable product, cans and boxes and bags of shelf-stable food. But then we also have our refrigerators and freezers that have a lot of fresh product, dairy, milk, eggs, meat, produce. A lot of the product that is either very expensive at stores or not easily accessible from the neighbors that we serve. And then we also have our market, which is our on-site food pantry that serve people directly. And we operate distributions in communities in the 11 counties throughout the month.
So if anyone listening right now needed to take advantage of these services, how could they, you know, do them?
Absolutely. So you would go to our website. It's pittsburghfoodbank.org. And there is a button that says find food. And you would just put on your zip code and it would come up with any of our pantries, our distributions, any way that we service the community. And it would show you opportunities and areas to get food that's close to home.
Yeah. So you were saying at the start of this interview that you're seeing unprecedented need. Can you talk a little about the current situation with food insecurity, especially here in Allegheny County?
Absolutely. So we're somewhat at this crossroad right now where federal funding had already impacted the food bank and the food that we had to purchase and to buy from our farmers. And then Pennsylvania is the only state that does not have a passed budget. So we're also not receiving some funds, and some of our agency partners are not receiving funds that they expected to have to purchase food. And then finally, with the government shutdown, we've got about 26,000 federal employees in our service area, so in our 11 county area. And we also have about 340,000 people who receive SNAP benefits. And you probably have heard that without the government operating in November, in fact, beginning November 1st, folks are not receiving their SNAP benefits. And for our neighbors, SNAP is the first line of defense against hunger. And so we're seeing so many new people where SNAP really helped close the gap. So people didn't need to rely on their food pantries and their soup kitchens because the SNAP was helping them be able to purchase food close to them.
So given this great need, if someone does have more to give, how could they potentially get in contact with you and help out?
That's a great question. So if you have more to give, and we definitely prioritize cash donations because $1 provided can provide up to 3 meals. Because of our buying power, we're able to take that $1 and buy so much more food than if you were to go to the store and purchase it with retail prices. And so cash donations really are a great way to support the food bank. And CMU right now is embarking on their 32nd annual fundraising campaign with a goal of $100,000. And it is our largest community fundraiser each year, where the CMU community truly, truly pitches in and donates generously. If you are able to donate, please visit pittsburghfoodbank.org/CMU32. And you'll see this great fundraising campaign, and we are really hoping to get to $100,000 by the end of the week.
Can you tell me a little more about how cash works for you guys and why it's so valuable?
Sure. So donated product is great, and CMU also does a great job collecting peanut butter and shelf-stable product, and that gets out into the community and is so very appreciated. But with the food bank, it's a buying power. It is like, because we are providing, last year we provided 53 million meals to our community. And so we are able to work with distributors and wholesalers to really get the best price on shelf-stable product. But more importantly, those cash dollars help us to purchase the fresh food, the meat and the cheeses and the dairy and the produce that is so valuable and so desired by the folks that we serve.
Yeah. You also mentioned that you buy from farms. Do you try to focus on buying locally, or do you just go where your dollar makes the most impact for you?
Yeah, we have so many local farm partners, Apple Castle and some of our dairies, a Turner Dairy, Schneider's Dairy. We really partner with so many local farms that we are purchasing produce and dairy and meat from them.
If somebody wanted to volunteer, is that also an option?
Absolutely. We have, we utilized last year 6,900 volunteers, and there are a number of ways to get involved. We have volunteers 5 days a week in our volunteer engagement center, which is our warehouse. And then we also have volunteers in the market, which is our on-site food pantry. That's 6 days a week. And we have distributions around the community throughout the month. And so the best way to look for volunteer opportunities that fit your schedule is to go to our website, and you could go to pittsburghfoodbank.org/volunteer, or you can navigate from the website in how to get involved, and you can find the different volunteer options and sign up right online.
Yeah. Do you find that there are any misconceptions in terms of giving time or money to food banks or using food bank services?
Sure. I think the biggest misconception is that there's a shame in needing services. We really pride ourselves on providing a very dignified experience. And right now, life is hard. Life is difficult. Making ends meet is difficult. Most of the people we serve are working and have a paycheck. But the cost of food and the cost of rent and the cost of transportation really is making it hard for people to make ends meet. And so we really want to share that there is no shame in coming and getting extra help.
For sure. All right. Well, this has been awesome. So is there anything else that you think people should know or you wish I had asked?
I think really just to share, it's the power of you and the power of every individual and every company and every organization really getting involved, giving back and doing their part. It's really the only way we're going to be able to combat hunger in our region.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Jennifer Zagurich with the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. Up next, I talked to Carol Pano about the Carnegie Mellon Food Drive, which will be running up until November 8th. Hello. So now I have Carol Pano, who is the chair of the Stout Council Food Drive Committee. Can I get you to introduce yourself a little?
Sure. Hi, Rihanna. Again, as you said, my name is Carol Pano. I'm actually a Carnegie Mellon alum, got my undergraduate degree in 1990 and my master's in 1991. And I've been involved with the food drive so long that I can't remember, probably 31, if not all 32 years of the drive, and have been chairing it or co-chairing it for many, many, many years. Again, too long to remember. So it's a passion of mine to coordinate the drive and to help fight food insecurity for our region.
Yeah. So as you said, the food drive has been happening for 32 years and you've been there for most of them. So can you tell me a little about the history of the drive and how it's changed over time?
It's really rather astonishing how it's changed. So in the first year of the drive, we collected, not to be exact, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,200 to 1,400 pounds of food. That was it. No money, tons of food. But at the time, it was very successful. It was the first time it was done. And it really caught on with the campus community as something that they would want to rally around and something that Staff Council would continue to sponsor. Fast forward, 5 to 10 years, and people started inquiring about collecting money. As a fundraiser here at the university, I was comfortable with that. My co-chair at the time was a little nervous, but we started to collect money and it became not an even balance. We would still collect more non-perishables, but over the years we saw the dollar totals going up and up for two reasons. A lot easier for people to give money than to carry in canned goods. And also the food bank is really good about pushing out the messaging of their buying power. Then you fast forward to COVID. During COVID, we weren't on campus. Most people weren't on campus. But we did begin our first drive-in drops during that time period. And during COVID, those were no contact opportunities for people to drop off non-perishables. We were still wildly successful at collecting canned goods. But during COVID, the dollars really went through the roof. It also coincided with the food bank's ability to take gifts online, which had just started a year or two before COVID, and that made it even easier for people to give cash. And that's when we first started to see the potential, and one of the first years that we hit $100,000. So that was a true milestone for the drive. And since then, really a passion of me and the committee to keep that up and keep trying for $100,000. So here we are now, where we're really focused on the cash, but we never forbid, you know, the opportunity to bring non-perishables, because some people really like to go out, pick out canned goods. We also support the food pantry, as you might know, the CMU food pantry. The first year that they opened, we did an event specific to collecting canned goods for the pantry. But what we learned, Riona, is that the student needs are very specific. So collecting random non-perishables and giving it to the pantry is not effective. It's much better for the pantry to be able to partner with the food bank and purchase what the students want. And so that's why hopefully you and your listeners have noticed that each year we specifically collect an item that the food pantry is asking for, which has most often been can openers. Kind of not intuitive until you really think about it. If students have cans, but they can't open them, they can't eat the food. So the can openers are a very popular item. And what we as a Carnegie Mellon community collect and give to the pantry, they go through each year. So I get a lot of questions as chair of the drive about why are we collecting for Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank? Why aren't we collecting more for the pantry? And that bottom line answer is, they can do better for the students if they go buy inexpensively from the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank and get the students what they want and need.
Can you speak a little more to the overall community response that you see happening to this food drive?
The last few days have been in particular great. You know, we're at a juncture where things are slowing down. You know, there's probably a little bit of donor fatigue. There are a lot of other things going on campus and in people's lives. But from Monday through midday yesterday, we collected about $17,000. That's really great. We need that momentum to keep up between now and November 8th if we want to hit the $100,000 mark. So we need to find ways to get the word out. I ask everybody that I know, and I ask everywhere I'm at. I was out socially with people last night and mentioned it to the people there who were friends of a friend, and they were handing me cash. You know, I think people know the dire need and they want to be able to help. And even though anybody can just, you know, go to the food bank website or send a check to Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank, it's a lot easier and more accessible if somebody's in front of them saying, here's a link, or give me a check. Hand me $5. I can take care of it for you. I can help you make a difference. I can help you be a part of 300,000 meals for our community and make it simple, and people will do it. People are inherently good, right? Most people are inherently good.
Yeah. So speaking of all this effort you've been putting in, can you kind of talk? I mean, you've been doing this for 30 years and I'm sure it just gets more complicated every year. Can you talk a little about the work that happens behind the curtains to make it so seamless for people to donate?
There's a lot of work that goes on, as you say, behind the curtain. We have probably close to 100 volunteers here on campus, and those are the people that I know are helping to work on the drive. You know, think about all the things that go into it. There are all the marketing aspects. So making the yard signs, making the posters and flyers, the social media posts. There's all the people at the food bank who help with setting up their site, tracking the gifts, updating the website, making fixes when somebody calls me and says, I wanted to give to the computer science team and I actually gave to the computing services team. Can you help me? You know, there are all the people on the teams, the team leaders, people that work our events. So we had the drive and drop. We had the Fall Fest that I mentioned. We have the benefits fair table coming up. All of us that are involved in going out and soliciting the raffle prizes to help entice our people to give to the, you know, to the food drive at all our events that we have. There are so many things. I'm sure I haven't even touched on everything.
Yeah. And so what do you think is the real importance of having this food drive as opposed to anything else people could be doing with their time and money?
I'm a person that loves tradition and history. And the woman who started this drive 32 years ago, she and I are still friends. She's long since retired. And when she left, she made me promise that the drive would not die. And, you know, I really intend to keep that promise, one, because it's important to Gloria, it's important to me, and two, because, again, tradition is important and history is important. So as a staff council, we could easily say, you know what, this year, instead of doing the food drive, why don't we raise money for the Heart Association? That's important, right? But we have a deep tradition and a deep partnership now with the food bank. We are their largest single organization drive that they have. They rely on us. You know, our $100,000 is important to them. They know that they can count on us. And so if we just go away and take that away from them, that's a significant hit to their organization. It's a significant hit to the needy in our community that we are trying to assist. And as I may have mentioned previously, this is a really tangible way that Carnegie Mellon can impact the community. And if you look at the pillars of, you know, the strategic pillars of the university, like one of the things that we say we do and we want to do and continue to do is support the community. So this is something where, you know, for instance, when I'm out meeting with alumni and we're talking about what are the many things that CMU does for the community, this is one thing that I can mention and one thing that really resonates with people because they know about the food bank. It, oftentimes they know about people in their neighborhoods that are in need, or maybe they support the food bank, not through CMU, but just on their own, and they're happy to hear about our efforts. So I think that just the partnership, the importance, and the tradition and history, those are the reasons why I think that we should continue to do it, hopefully forever.
So that was Carol Pano talking about the history and context of the Carnegie Mellon Food Drive, which, as a reminder, will be ongoing up until November 8th. Next, I went down to the Res on 5th to find Jonathan Anguiano at the CMU Food Pantry to talk about food resources that are available on campus to students.
So I'm here in the CMU Pantry with Jonathan Anguiano. So nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad you were able to reach out for the CMU Pantry and be happy to talk about it as the program coordinator for basic needs and community initiatives.
Yeah, so let's just get started. How did the CMU Pantry come about?
Yeah, so the CMU Pantry came about back in 2017, 2018 with a campus cupboard study around that time. It mentioned how it was a big survey done to the student population and found that around 19% of our CMU students were food insecure at the time. So to address that situation, the pantry went through multiple iterations of a task force, working group, and then we found a location here on Residence on 5th, where we're able to now have a full-scale pantry that operates having non-perishable foods, fresh produce, cleaning supplies, household products, baby care items. And now we also have frozen produce, frozen meals, and a different bunch of initiatives that we were able to do this year.
Yeah, so can you tell me a little about the initiatives that you've had this year then?
Yeah, so we fortunately have been able to be recipients for a PA Hunger Free Campus grant. So it is a grant program funded by the Commonwealth of PA. We've been receiving that for the last 3 years, $60,000 for the last couple of years, funding multiple initiatives. It can go into infrastructure of the pantry. So if you ever visited in the back of the pantry, you will see that we used to have a bunch of stainless steel countertops. We gutted that to include more space for inventory and refrigerator space, and have a bunch of more new refrigerators now as well to just increase the stock for our students. Some of those new initiatives also included working with our great partners in dining services and Chartwell's for frozen meals to give out to for all of our students. They give a more comprehensive, quick meal since time is the biggest issue for our students here. So trying to meet them where they're at with a frozen meal, giving a bunch of frozen produce options, either one protein, one vegetable, and one fruit. And we have an awesome meal swipe program that is specifically only for pantry shoppers or students who are on the highest level of food insecurity. So at this point in time, students impacted by SNAP, the benefit pause at the moment, are eligible for that program, and we're doing that proactive outreach to give them. At the moment, it's 14 meal swipes per semester, We know that's not a large amount and is nowhere near addressing the actual root cause, but it's at least something for students to be able to focus on their midterms, their finals, things that they need to succeed here at CMU.
Yeah, so if a student does need these resources, what would be the steps that they would take to get in contact with you and start taking advantage of this?
Yeah, so easiest way is to, let's say if you just want to come to the pantry, shop, and visit our facilities. If you go into our website, the CMU Pantry, just typing that in and finding us in the Student Affairs webpage, you'll be able to sign up, complete a pantry shopping form, and pick out a selected appointment. We do an appointment schedule, that way you're able to just come in at your own time, your own leisure, go and come in for 20 minutes, shop of what you need without it being packed and full of distractions, and trying to bridge that gap of just comfortability for you. Come in, grab items you need, and then you can go out. If it's a more emergency situation, like a meal swap enrollment, or you have not eaten the last couple of days, you can immediately reach out to our office, of the Office of Community Engagement and Leadership Development. Within our webpage is our phone number for our office. Talking to any of those folks during business hours will connect you to the right appropriate person, aka me or someone else that has functions overseeing the pantry. Or if it's not as immediate, but you will need it within the week, reaching out to our CMU pantry email at cmu-pantry@andrew.cmu.edu. And then one of our team members will get in touch about how to get you enrolled and what other resources we can give you, both at CMU and in the local region.
Yeah, so you were talking about the needs specifically on this campus. Obviously, food insecurity is an issue across most college campuses, but what's the situation like here at Carnegie Mellon?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, food insecurity is a national crisis. It's not just here at CMU, it's all throughout. For frame of reference, the Hope Center, which is one of the leading scholars for basic needs, identifies that 59% of students are experiencing some level of basic need insecurity, whether that's food, housing, transportation, etc. Here at CMU, we're definitely below the national average. So as I mentioned before, in 2017, it was 19% of our students were at least some level of food insecure. With the recent Healthy U 2023 campus survey, we got data back that it was down to 11%. So great movement that we're doing with the pantry, with the more outreach and support that we're doing. But I think the biggest thing next is now the new iteration of the Healthy U 2025 survey that just launched this week, having as many students as possible fill that out in order for us to see where we needing to be proactive in our efforts.
Yeah, so I'm in the pantry, so I can kind of see some things you have available. But for people who aren't here, can you describe what services and like items are available?
Yeah, so we have a wide assortment of items that we get every week from the food bank, from the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. They're one of our main partners that we purchase food from and get all of their food into our location. So when you come in, you'll see a bunch of shelves, some baskets, a huge fridge with full of produce. So come in, look around, you'll be able to get an assortment of rice, pastas, vegetables, canned goods like your pantry staples, beans, canned tuna, chicken, fruits, and some also quick prepared meals. We have a lot of ramen, to-go Spanish rices, soups, broths, things like that, that just are things that you can easily quick up and heat. And then we also try to offer a lot of vegetarian options. So always have in stock peanut butter, tofu, chickpeas, and a wide assortment of that. And then when you come in for our produce fridge, that is unlimited, so you can get as much as you need for the week. Always staples such as potatoes and onions, with a wide assortment every week, depending on the farmers and the overproduction that we get that week. So for this week, for example, we have some pears, some apples, and some tomatoes. So it depends on the season, we'll get different fruits and veggies.
Yeah, so as you said that you have done some stuff like taking out all the counters, where do you plan to go next with the food pantry? Or are you in a good place and you just want to keep it going, rolling?
Yeah, great question. Right now, we're in a good spot in terms of all of our infrastructure. We've done all we can. We're maximizing as much space as we can in this location that we're in, our residence on Fifth. I think at this point in time, it's just now innovating and keep putting more funding into our new initiatives like the Meal Swipe program, like increasing our numbers of frozen meals we're able to give to students, things like that, I think is our main priority. And also finding out what are some new ways to reach our students. One big thing that I'm trying to do is do more SNAP education, and trying to get as many students who are eligible for it enrolled here at CMU to also make that grocery bill every week and every month as low as possible while you are a student studying at this high academic institution.
For sure. That's awesome. All right. So my last question is just, is there anything I didn't ask and you wanted to say, or anything else people should know?
The only other thing I will mention is that the university is doing a lot more work in terms of the basic needs world now that we have the community engagement and leadership development office and a more like specific mission for it. So keep an eye out in the future as the Tarn Basic Needs Collective, a new working group that's going to be looking at basic needs as a whole. We're going to be looking at that. We're having some student participation with folks from Student Senate, GSA, and the Student Dormitory Council. So I'm sure there will be some opportunities for some students who really value doing the work or supporting basic needs or food pantries or sustainability in the future. So I say keep your eye on that for the next couple of years as we start this process and start identifying what we need to do as a university and how we can all do it more together. Because this is an important thing for us to concentrate on.